You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Well, here we are at dangerous idea number 5. And some might be thinking, what in the world could be so dangerous about being born again? Well, not that much, as long as you don't take it too seriously. The problem with the idea of being born again is that it's become weaponized. It's yet another way for some Christians to exclude others, and not just exclude people, but condemn them to what they believe are literal eternal fires of hell. So again, I've got to ask, what are you saying about God if you believe this divine being is so insecure that he, and it's definitely a he, is going to condemn people to eternal torture for not speaking the proper magic words? And there's a word for people who align themselves with this God: sadistic. And what's so sad, as you may have already guessed from our previous most dangerous ideas, is that these all-important magic words are not even in the Bible. Today's words of wisdom contain the passages in which people think these words appear, but as you'll hear in a moment, they do not appear. Why? Because we're reading the Scholar's Edition, a translation that actually reflects what the original Greek says, not what later translators have massaged. But before we hear our infamous passage, a bit of context. Back in Jesus' day, Jewish Jerusalem, under the Romans, was administered by a group called the Sanhedrin. It was kind of a cross between a religious city council and the Supreme Court. In Hebrew, the word Sanhedrin literally means sitting together. The people who sat together on the Sanhedrin were the one percenters, the privileged class of Jerusalem, wealthy, well-educated, respected, feared, and most importantly, defenders of the status quo. One of these prominent religious leaders was named Nicodemus. Jesus, on the other hand, was rapidly developing a dangerous reputation. In fact, the encounter described in our passage today occurs right after Jesus has driven the money changers out of the temple, losing his temper, overturning tables, driving people out with a whip of cords. Yikes! So, what you got here is one of the most respected citizens and religious leaders in all of Jerusalem breaking ranks and seeking out the counsel of a revolutionary. It's no wonder Nicodemus went late at night under cover of darkness. And one more thing to remember. The Gospel of John was written around 100 of Common Era. And why that's important is that the Jesus people had been kicked out of the synagogues in about 90, essentially excluding Jesus followers from official Judaism. So, John has an axe to grind with Jewish leaders, and more than any of the other Gospels, verges on anti-Semitism in his negative portrayal of the Jews. The character of Nicodemus appears only in the Gospel of John and was most likely created for our story to symbolically represent the mainline voice of Judaism. Why that's important will become clear as we dive into our text.
Our words of wisdom are from John chapter 3, verse 1 through 9. The Scholar's Edition. A Pharisee named Nicodemus, a Judean leader, came to Jesus during the night and said,
"Rabbi, we know that you've come as a teacher from God. After all, nobody can perform the miracles you do unless God is with him."
Jesus replied to him, "As God is my witness, no one can experience God's imperial rule without being born from above."
Nicodemus says to him, "How can an adult be reborn? Can you re-enter your mother's womb and be born a second time?"
Jesus replied, As God is my witness, no one can enter God's domain without being born of water and spirit. What is born of the human realm is human, but what is born of the spiritual realm is spirit. Don't be surprised that I told you, every one of you must be reborn from above. The spirit blows every which way like wind. You hear the sound it makes, but you can't tell where it is coming from or where it is headed. That's how it is with everyone reborn of the spirit.
How can that be possible? Nicodemus retorted. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Why did he do it? Why did Nicodemus steal into the night for a clandestine meeting with a subversive leader of riots? Maybe he was having a midlife crisis. Rabbi Harold Kushner summed it up in his book title, When All You Ever Wanted Isn't Enough. You reach the age when you are supposed to achieve certain goals. You set those goals for yourself. You're there now and you haven't achieved them. And it hits you. You are never going to. Maybe that's where it was for Nicodemus. John's gospel is loaded with symbolism. So to have our story begin late one night is important. Night is used metaphorically to represent separation from the presence of God. Elsewhere, John describes Jesus as the light of the world, come to dispel the darkness. He's rejected by the majority and sought out by only a few. It's not a stretch to say John is implying that Nicodemus coming to Jesus in darkness is not just commenting on the hour, but on Nicodemus' spiritual condition. Jesus and Nicodemus' extended conversation contains some sayings which have become pretty famous, including John 3:16, which you'll probably recognize from signs at football games. For God so loved the world that he sent his only son, Aaron Rodgers. Jesus. Another well-known phrase is, you must be born of water and the Spirit. But I want to concentrate on that most dangerous of phrases that is familiar to most people in our culture, even if they've never been to church. You must be born again. At least, that's what the King James Version says. Too bad it's not what the Greek says. For many, to be born again is the definition of the Christian experience, a form of elitism implying that those who can boast of having been born again are somehow a cut above all other Christians. It's become a litmus test, if you will, of true Christianity, and as such has become a form of exclusiveness. Some of you may have been browbeaten by some well-intentioned believer that if you're not born again, you can't call yourself a Christian. But here's the problem. Jesus never says it. So where does it come from then? Remember, the Gospel of John tends to portray Jews in a bad light. And here it is again. Who better to portray as a dim bulb who just doesn't get what Jesus is saying than one of the leading religious leaders of the Jews? And what's the first thing Nicodemus does? He misinterprets what Jesus is saying. Ironically, Nicodemus demonstrates one of the most common of Christian fundamentalist mistakes. He takes Jesus' words literally instead of metaphorically. Now, if you look at a Revised Standard Version or other newer translation that takes the Bible seriously, you'll note that instead of having Jesus tell Nicodemus he needs to be born again, he says, you have to be born from above. What? That's what the Greek actually says, born from above. The word in Greek is anothen, the up place. Nicodemus's response is one of misunderstanding. Huh? What? Born a second time? I don't get it. Then Jesus has to explain it to him. I'm talking about a reorientation of your life, Jesus says, being born from above. So the way the King James Version phrases it, being born again is lovely and poetic, but is not what the Greek says. And it misses Jesus' point. Sadly, for those publishing the New King James Version or other Bibles used in evangelical churches, literary accuracy doesn't matter. Their client base has too much invested in the phrase born again, so they leave it in. Some have enough integrity to include an asterisk with the footnote. Actually, it's born from above, but not all. Well, who cares? Why does it matter? Because what John has Jesus say and what born-again Christians promote are worlds apart in what they promote spiritually. For your consideration, to be born from above suggests that the source of your life, that which gives you direction and purpose, is from something beyond yourself. It's dynamic, it's relational, and not static. And it's exactly what Jesus says later in the passage. The Spirit blows every which way, like wind. You hear the sound it makes, but you can't tell where it's coming from or where it's headed. That's how it is with everyone reborn of the Spirit. On the other hand, the born again promoted by modern Christians is a one-time event. I was saved on October 17th, 1954. Well, bully for you. But those who think that being born again is a once and forever experience fail to understand what Jesus was really saying. Granted, there are folks who can attest to genuine, instantaneous, life-changing experiences. A friend of mine attributes his having been able to go cold turkey off of alcohol to his having been born again. And I've heard these two ways of becoming a follower of Jesus described as revolutionary or evolutionary. And whichever way you take it, the bottom line is people are hungry for transformation. And it looks different for each person. That's why Jesus put his call on people in so many different ways, depending on their situation, who they were, and where they were on their journey. To one person, Jesus said, "You got to sell all you have and give it to the poor." To another, he said, "You've got to leave your families, your fathers, your mothers, or leave the dead to bury the dead, or you must become like children," etc., etc. But to most people, Jesus simply said, "Follow me." He said it over and over and over again in all the Gospels. Follow me, follow me, follow me. If you consider the number of times he said it, following Jesus becomes the simplest definition and most reliable measure of being a Christian. But to Nicodemus, and Nicodemus only, Jesus said, "You must be born from above." This is the only place where the phrase appears in Scripture. Why? Because for Nicodemus, who for his whole life was fixated on the Pharisaic disciplines of winning God's love by following the proper rules, Jesus wanted to say, it's not about that. You need to be motivated, inspired, and informed by values that are superior to just following the law. For Jesus, those values were things like compassion and mercy and seeking justice and including the excluded. Look, one thing we can all be sure of is that life is always changing. For my personal and spiritual life, I'm partial to the metaphor of journey. We're always moving, always changing. And if we don't change, life will do it for us. That's when it hurts. To be wrenched out of the life we thought was permanent for us, where we felt comfortable. Someday, maybe, your world will fall apart. And then, what you believe now, with all your heart, won't be adequate to put your world back together again. That's what it takes for some people to finally open up for the Spirit to renew their lives. Up to then, it couldn't have happened, wouldn't have happened. It's what Robert McCaffey Brown calls creative dislocation. He writes how, in retrospect, the times of the most significant growth in his life were times of great upheaval or creative dislocation. Things happen which cause us to reevaluate the way we live our lives. And it happens one other way, the way it happened to Nicodemus. He met Jesus. There was no crisis in Nicodemus's life. Things were going okay with him. In fact, things were really good. He was at the top of his profession. He was content with the way life was. It was good to him. Then he met Jesus, and he could no longer be content. Jesus was the crisis for Nicodemus. Jesus overturned the tables in the temple. He upset Nicodemus's world and got him asking questions about the ultimate meaning of what he'd placed his allegiance in. Sometimes a person's world changes and they come to Jesus. But sometimes Jesus comes into your world and you have to change. That's been one of the challenges over the years as I've taught various Living the Questions classes. Many people in the class are coming from a Nicodemus-like place, comfortable, successful, curious. And then we take a hard look at Jesus, who was not white, not American, not well off, not a capitalist. In fact, most of his teachings call into question the values of most well-off, white, capitalist Americans. For most people hearing this for the first time, there's resistance. Of course Jesus supports my lifestyle, my choices, and my prejudices. I don't oppress anyone. And if I do, it's because the Bible says I can. Ah, spoken like a true Roman or elite religious leader in Jerusalem. Spoken like the white supremacists who used the Bible to support segregation and oppose Martin Luther King Jr. Spoken like the fearmongers who tried to discredit anyone who tries to have a conversation about race or the current state of democracy in our country. Jesus wouldn't be caught dead out in the streets protesting with people feeling oppressed by a system in which they feel silenced. Oh, wait. Right before this Nicodemus story, Jesus had been overturning tables of the status quo money changers in the temple. Maybe you could call him the lead organizer of Occupy Jerusalem. So, whatever you do, don't look too closely at Jesus' life and teachings. They may bring you to a moment of creative dislocation. They may bring you to your own Nicodemus moment. A moment when you have to say, I thought I lived an enlightened life. Now, since I've encountered Jesus, I look back and realize I was in the dark. Once I thought I was righteous and made right decisions. Now I look back and realize how often I was wrong. We're convicted with the possibility that maybe, just maybe, we need to reevaluate our priorities. Change our perspective, and start from scratch. When that happens, then we can truly understand the importance of being born from above. However you put it, it dawns on us, the divine dawns on us. All I can say is, if you have to be born again, please be born from above. Let your priorities and goals be set by something other than the common everyday notions of success or respectability. Make compassion, generosity, and grace your life's goals, no matter how disruptive it is to the old you. John Gardner was asked why he had so many jobs in his life. He said, "I believe in repotting. I'm an amateur gardener, and I noticed that when a plant reaches a certain growth, the pot becomes too confining for it. If you don't repot it, it'll stunt its growth and maybe even die. He said that he looked at life that way. There would come a time when he would see a broader vista, bigger challenges in his life, and he would just repot himself. To hang on to the static concept of being born again condemns us to a tiny spiritual pot when we're called to grow and grow and not become root-bound, but reach for our potential, nourished, inspired, and like the wind that Jesus spoke of, renewing us from above. One last thing. At the end of John's gospel, when Joseph of Arimathea offers to place Jesus in his own tomb, there's one other member of the Sanhedrin who risks his reputation and livelihood to come and help prepare Jesus' body when all the other disciples have run away. Maybe there's something to John having named this character not with a Hebrew name, but a Greek one. After all, Nicodemus is from Nike, victory, and Demos, the people, victory of the people. It was Nicodemus, even before the apostles, who finally got it. May we get it too, and let Jesus be a crisis in our lives, dislocating us into new ways of being. And that would indeed be a victory.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.